be waiting by the shore. Stand in a circle with love and arms around you, yeah. Come to the river where the mighty waters flow. And as the river unwinds, you'll see the turns of your life.
And you are listening to Heart of Mind Radio for the New Millennium. I'm Catherine Davis, and I welcome you to today's program. And we're going to be taking a look, perhaps being somewhat introspective, by looking at the state of our world through the lens of spiritual eyes, allowing those eyes to help return us to our roots as original people. No matter our race or culture, we all have an original earth people from which we come. Survival of humanity depends on reintegrating the ancient wisdom of our ancestors. Considering the strategies for a modern person to enter the quantum, to retrieve that wisdom from our perceived past. In truth, the past lives in our DNA, in the wind, in the sun, in the waters, and in the breath. You're My Earth. The name of that song is Earth by Michelle Indiacello. And before that, we heard Come to the River by Diane Reeves. And we started today's program with Frog Dancing by David Anthony Clark. And I woke up today very early, feeling very much into my, what would I say? I would say kind of a in-between space, which is becoming very normal for me these days, where I'm not quite in one world or another. And it's more than a lingering dream space. There's actually an environmental context to that space of being not quite grounded within the reality we live, the 3D reality that we grew up in. And I've been working on this probably, well, maybe my whole life, but certainly in my adult life and the latest years of my adult life. I have been, in one fashion, endeavoring to escape from the madness that we encounter, that I've encountered on a personal level, but also with regard to the world in which we live. And it seems that no matter how difficult it gets, the capacity for things getting worse, there seems to be no bounds. And at some point in this journey, the spiritual journey that I have encountered and kind of trundle along that path, has been one in which it's more than, I think, an intellectual expansion. It becomes a physical expansion as well. And to me, and for my own experience, this has become a very powerful opportunity to craft my life in such a way that it can be sacred, that it can be interesting, it can be fun, and with authentic engagement as much as possible. And so I think that this is something that we all seek out in our own way and find our own individual path in our own way. And as I was contemplating these things to speak with you today, I wanted to find a way to encapsulate why I have currently and have always had such a difficult time with third dimensional reality. But I've come to realize that it isn't the experience of 3D or third dimension, because third density, depending on how you look at it. If you look at it from the perspective and experience it from the perspective of the living earth, then it's a beautiful experience. You know, there are the dangers that come with the natural world, and there are the challenges that come with the complication of human society. But it's really a very beautiful opportunity to experience life with a certain kind of vitality that isn't concretely in other densities the way it is in this one. The level of feeling, whether that be pain or love or just the experience of touch, seeing, smelling, tasting. It's a really beautiful thing that I believe exists here in ways that doesn't exist in other realities. So when we go into our dream state and we experience all of our senses, in some ways that happens because we know what it is. We can generate and replicate our senses within our dream experiences. So I think that one of the motivation for coming to third density life is to pick up that tangible information and allow it to be part of whom we are, so that even though we might at other times experience other kinds of realities, we would have that experience of touching and seeing and tasting, smelling, encounters, intimacy, so many things that are in some ways raw here in the earth plane, but it comes with a vitality that may not be accessible in densities that do not have this physical kind of organic matter as the point of expressing. And I believe it's worthwhile to consider ourselves to be a force of nature, just like the wind and the water and the air, the earth, the mountains, the volcanoes, the hurricanes, all of these actions and movements in the natural world. We could include ourselves as part of that existence. We exist as the earth. All the elements of our body are of the earth. We breathe of the air, the oxygens, the gases, which are also part of our body. And we take in the sun and the stars, which have an impact on an energetic level. We can see that when there are sunspots and, you know, outbursts from the sun, they have an impact on Earth and on our bodies. As the stars pass through their time in the sky, as the solar systems change, as the planetary bodies move around in and out of relationship with each other, all of that has an impact on each of us. And in many ways, this is more of an indigenous, aboriginal way of understanding reality. And I believe that we would be much better off coming into a deeper awareness of this truth about ourselves. So often we detach from our actual reality and become enamored with the power of the mind, as if the mind has all the power and lives in a hierarchy of understanding and knowing. And perhaps there's a potential for that to be true, but it isn't natively true. I believe that when we can move through the world as if we are a force of nature, we have much more power. And we are much closer to the authentic self than when we isolate ourselves in our mind thoughts. Not that our thoughts, you know, they have power, because when we engage in thinking processes, they interact with our bodies, with our environment, with our world. And the thoughts of our mind begin to shape our world. That much is true. But I think the problem with elevating the mind to the highest in the hierarchy of being is that we don't have control over it. I mean, we can do things, we can do affirmations, we can model certain kinds of strategies for getting our mind under some control. But by and large, our minds are being impacted by the artificial environment. So if you think of a native person, aboriginal person living in the bush or on the plains, the mind is shaped by that environment as well. It's important to know when it's going to rain. It's important to know how the seasons flow. It's important to learn about plants and to come to understanding of cultivation through that knowledge, and knowing where it's safe to live and where it's not safe. So I think the mind is designed to be shaped by the environment in which the mind is placed. So the initial environment of the mind is our physical body, and the body being in the world, that's another environment that shapes the mind. But our modern society has become very fractured, and our minds are fed by ideologies and philosophies that come from beyond our most intimate self. And we have societies that, rather than raising their children ultimately to be able to navigate a natural environment, we raise our children to be able to navigate an artificial environment. So we are, in many ways, teaching them how to survive in schools and workplaces, how to measure their success by artificial standards in terms of how much money you have and how much resources you have, what kind of car you have, what kind of looks you have. And as part of this external commercialized environment, the way it works is that it sells people on what they don't have, and undersells or undermines or, in fact, throws out those things that are innately powerful within us. So we go about our lives trying to stay young. I think there's merit to staying healthy and fit, but it doesn't make sense to be always reaching for something that is counterindicated to the truth. We don't stay young. Every moment takes us a moment older. And we are growing up in a society that allows us to judge ourselves primarily. And then as we get deeper into that sort of externalized process, we begin to judge each other's, but not so much judge from the sense of gaining an assessment of whom the persons are that come through our life. It becomes more of a grading system. Well, I'm not that fat. I may be fat, but I'm not that fat. Or, you know, something like that. We'll say to ourselves, well, that person is a risk for me because they might know something I don't know. And then we get into ways of undermining other people by virtue of our lack of confidence in ourselves and needing to undermine that person in order to feel good about whom we are. And we can look out in the world saying, oh yeah, well, this person, that one, this one. And it just balloons into a culture that undermines our innate qualities as human beings. And this is one of the reasons I'm suggesting we get back to the roots of our original people, whatever that might be. Every region of the world has its own original inhabitants that have certain characteristics and certain vulnerabilities genetically based on the environment and strengths based on the environment and cultures. And I think it's important to get back into that so that we can remember how to process our current state based on the fact that we each are a force of nature. We each are unique beings, one from the other, not better than the other or worse than the other in a native way. We might develop those things, but innately we all are unique and valuable beings. And I believe that we come into this planet, into this realm, with a gift. We each have something to contribute. And I've heard people describe it, or maybe I've referred to it also in this way, of life being like a quilt. And you have all these patches sewn together, creating an overall image of the quilt. And our life is kind of like that. We go through different ages, you know, we're infants and toddlers and school graders and teenagers and adult people and workers and family people. So we have all these facets of our being that are woven together into our quilt of life. And if we can appreciate that, then we can really come to experience ourselves with a more realistic picture of who we are. And each of us, with our individual quilts and experiences woven in, is what is carrying us along that journey to our gift in some ways, our destiny in some ways. And we can begin to look at how we can build a better world for ourselves based on what we experience inside our skin. But also, once we've come to do that, we can begin to create a better world that all can share within and all can contribute to. And it's my sense that that scenario, such as it is a scenario, is more representative of the purpose of being alive. And when I weave into this thinking, I go into some of my Taoist teachings, which I'm very fond of, Taoism and the healing principles around it within Qigong and traditional Chinese medicine, which is very closely related to yoga and to many cultures that have this deep, rich understanding of the human family and how it fits into the environment and how the environment can nurture us as beings that are born of that environment. We're all one in a manner of speaking. So one of the things that's interesting about the Taoist teachings, which gives perspective on this conversation, and you may have heard often Taoists talking about a striving towards immortality. And there are many stories and myths and principles and practices, meditations, healing practices, that will bring forth that elixir of life and will allow us to become immortal. And as I was meditating on this and doing a lot of the practices, because they're kind of fun and they make me feel better, but what I've come to realize is that immortality, in its purest sense, is not that the Taoists were looking to live forever in their current state. So we have our lives. We want to have long and rich and fulfilling lives. But the nature of this world density that we live in is that we're passing through like a wave, like the wave of an ocean. You know, it comes up, crests, and then it goes down. And that cycle is representative of life experience. And when this life is through, we pass on to a different kind of reality or unreality, whatever that might be, depending on one's beliefs, I suppose. But according to the Taoists, the becoming immortal is not to be feverishly obsessed with extending one's life. Just like our current philosophy is, you know, has this feverish desire to stay young. But what the quest for immortality represents, as I understand it now, is that we are working on the expression of our life stream. So just like we connect through our DNA to our physical progenitors, we inherit from our grandparents and great-grandparents on infinitum that blend into the makeup of who we are. We inherit from the environment the kind of minerals that are in the soils and food, our capacity to endure the sun depends on where we are, people have grown up in this planet. But we also have this moving forward through greater waves of life expression. So we live through this life, then we go into a life that doesn't have a third dimensional expression. Some people think of that as a spiritual life, a spiritual realm, or a density that doesn't have the same level of physicality. And then we start another wave in this realm and have a different life expression. And I think one of the things that plagues humanity most of all is that we don't have a connection to that. We don't have the memory. We don't have the stories. We don't have the collective wisdom handed down from one generation to the next to be able to hold on to the wisdom that has been gathered through those generations. And the difficulty we have in terms of our personal life experience and life expression is that we don't really remember anything. We wake up as babies, and I think babies have a clue. But by the time the infant becomes a child, much of that has been suppressed by the need to integrate into their density. And then going through school, a lot more of that is suppressed if it survives early childhood. And then as we move into adulthood, that innate knowing becomes supplanted by social norms and political programming or social programming. So the idea of becoming an immortal within the context of a Taoist immortality is to nurture your state back through that infant stage of having a clue and going further into the precognitive state and being able to expand into the greater expression of existence from which life comes, so that an immortal is immortal not because they live for an eternity, but they can live through life experiences, maintaining their memories and their lessons and wisdom from what came before. And if not the actual memories, the method for regaining it, so that we can remind ourselves what our ancestors laid out for us, and also can open the pathway for us to become like those wise ancestors, both living and during the in-between spaces. So I just think it's really important for us to consider this as part of our life journey and as, you know, part of our purpose. Because how else will humanity survive but prosper in a real way and be cultivated into the kind of world that we all long for? And we can't reach that or generate that, create that, as long as we are allowing ourselves to be undermined by the chaos that is human-made. There's another kind of chaos, which is natural. It's a part of the creative process. There is a chaos that is able to be creative within the process that generates life. So we do need that. But the chaos that we experience in our world is very different, because it is chaos with an agenda manufactured by beings, disembodied minds, by the minds of people who are not connected to life, and by not being connected to life, are not connected to compassion, are not connected to love on a scale that the universe provides for. And we need to begin to do something about that. Stay tuned. I have more to say. But if you would like to offer your thoughts, you can do that by... This piece is After Dreaming by Wasis Diop. I'm in kind of a shamanic mode. Hello, you're on the air. Hey there, start again. You're on the air.
Greetings to the beloved community. I don't often catch your show because of my sleep pattern, but glad to catch it today and to hear other callers. You had a lot of thoughts there, quite profound in many ways, and I'd like to add a couple thoughts and a suggestion for continuance of this conversation. When you were talking about how the mind works, and just about everything, it made me think of Eastern philosophy. You mentioned the Tao, and Zen Buddhism has a concept of monkey mind and also beginner's mind, where and the Eastern perspective of Maya is much illusion. So we don't even see, as it were, what's before us. But I'd like to suggest you're continuing this dialogue to the respect, and I think you at one point did more of this, but bring on, until we get a totally focused metaphysical program, bring on two or three astrologers, especially with the Pluto return in the United States chart. And, you know, Pluto is kind of, it can be scary in terms of underground and mystery and upsetting things, 180 degrees. And also, when you speak about the fifth dimension, there are a lot of people who chart that out, who do books on that, you know, beyond the three-dimensional model that everyone is stuck in. And some other paranormal-type subjects that we don't hear about on BAI that should hopefully open people up. That is, it was put in, was it Hamlet? There's more in heaven and earth, Horatio, than ever dreamt of in your philosophy. There are dream people who help you to understand your dreams. Dreams, all of us have had dreams that save our lives, precognitive dreams. Dreams are just so powerful. So I'll listen over the air, and I'll listen for other my compatriots as they share their thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you. That's a wonderful suggestion. And I'm going to follow up on that. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, you're live on the air.
Yes, Kathy, how are you this afternoon?
I'm good, thank you.
Yes, I'd just like to say that I agree with you 100% on your analysis regarding the mind.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very powerful what you were alluding to. And I just like to say I appreciate your thoughts.
Oh, thank you.
And I just like to add that that quote that we all hear from time to time: "The mind is a terrible thing to waste."
Yeah. Thank you.
But keep up the good work, Kathy. I appreciate you, and I did meet you at Peg Leg up in upstate New York during those...
During the music festivals?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. I wish we could still do that. That would be so fun. That was so much fun.
Yeah. Powerful.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
Well, hopefully we'll be able to scare something up and do it again.
Well, let's hope.
Yeah. Okay.
But continue the great work. I listen to you often. Today was very special. My spirit said, go ahead and turn on the radio, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, because I'm going through a lot right now, especially during this pandemic, mm-hmm. like all of us are. And it's very enlightening.
Well, thank you very much. And, you know, the idea is to hang in there, because even with all this mess-a-gush that's going on in the world. Mm-hmm. You've got beauty inside of you, and you're bringing it out right now.
Absolutely. I appreciate it. Mm-hmm. And the programming that they do to us is, that's another subject, but, you know, I appreciate it.
All righty. So you take care.
Thank you. You too, Kathy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, we have to craft our life. You know, things don't happen by accident, especially in a world in which we don't have any of those obvious support systems. They're there, but we have to bring them forth by evoking them in our life. And that's part of the process. By understanding, we can research and find out some of the ancient ways. We can study with people in different cultures and bring those understandings into our life path. But I also think it's really important that we understand the times that we're living in. And one of the cultures that I've spent a good time with is the cultures of Central and South America, the Aztec Mayan cultures, which is derived out of the Olmec cultures. And part of the challenge we have is that we don't have a real connection with true history. Most of what we learn in school is just more propaganda. We don't really learn about the peoples of the earth, the original peoples of the earth. We don't get to learn our lives in the context of those original people. I mean, some cultures hold on to it, are able to. So for instance, the Scots and the Irish, they have a good grasp on their history. I'm not sure how far back it goes, but it goes back pretty far. The indigenous cultures here in the Americas, they have a pretty good grasp on their history. And there are some of us who have been separated by virtue of political, through the generations, have been separated from our heritage based on our lineages because of the insanity of separation through systems, political systems that have disrupted that. But what I'm saying is that it's not entirely disrupted because we have it within us. And as we reach into the different cultures or reach into our connection to nature, it wakes up that DNA, and it wakes up the ancient memory and allows us to be guided by that information, the coding, that we have inside of our own systems, in our own bodies. So there's a path to make that reconnection, and we can all reconnect with nature. And begin to move towards that experiential expansion beyond third dimension. So if we think of ourselves, 3D life is kind of a construct that is man-made in terms of roads and cities and airplanes and schools and corporations and hierarchies. A lot of that is are a series of man-made constructs that built over time, but we can reconnect to that more expansive, elusive state where we can connect to the fact that we are Earth, that every element in our body comes and is represented as this planet. We have rivers within us. We have gases within us. And that's just on the physical level. But beyond that, we have the capacity to move through quantum time and space through a consciousness that is deeper than our thinking mind. A lot of people refer to that as like the third eye, the pineal gland, allows you to have those visions. So we have a tremendous capacity. We've been very well served in the construction of our physical beings, however that came about. It's magical and magnificent. And once we begin to appreciate that and go back into it, then there's so much that we can do. I'm going to see if I can get a few more calls. Stay tuned. Hello, you're on the air. Oops. Hello, you're on the air.
Hey. All right, something magical that you just said that happened, because you just mentioned magic.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's something we might want to learn from our ancestors, because you were saying that that's a good thing to do. So the magical thing that happened was there was a... action that happened in Atlanta March 6th, and no police were injured. Anybody wants to look at that footage, okay? If anybody wants to look at that footage, they call it a certain type of pornography sometimes. Anyway. So if anybody wants to look at that, and it's just amazing. So that's, and then, okay, and that was the protest outside of Cop City. That's what I'm talking about. And no police were injured that day, or at all, probably ever there. So, and of course, Tortuguita, first environmentalist murdered by United States police, was murdered down there at Cop City. But as far as eliminating the need for police, I think that our ancestors didn't call the police when something bad happened. I think they took care of each other. And I come from a culture where people don't call the police. They actually go towards a situation when something's going on. So I encourage people to do more of what our ancestors probably did, which is take care of each other. You know,
mm-hmm.
The next time you think about calling the police, go towards the situation, the dreaded getting involved, right? It's an automatic support system, like what you're saying. And, I just got off the phone with, I missed part of your show, I'm so sorry, but I got a call from somebody, and they were saying that in the immigration culture, right,
mm-hmm.
people don't call the police. So they take care of each other.
Yeah,
it
becomes dangerous after a time. I would say also as a part of that is that we don't wait for the emergency. We start reaching out to each other before the emergency occurs so that we know whom our neighbors are, who might be vulnerable around us, and who might need help. And then
that's the de-escalation, right?
Mm-hmm.
De-escalation.
Not just I'm speaking beyond de-escalation. I'm saying mm-hmm. that we should know who our neighbors are and who's around us in our neighborhood and
mm-hmm.
commune with each other in such a way that we can solve problems before they arise as part of
sure.
the solution. I got to run.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And that was lovely. And I think it's really important that we do our best to do that and to help each other without agendas and to reach out and to live our lives without agendas and to appreciate what we bring without judgment is an important part of reconnecting ourselves to the human, the true human experience, like it was in many of our communities in the good old days. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, can I speak to the lady?
You're live right now, but you have to turn off your radio, and I'm very short of time.
Okay. How would you help two people who've been together for a long time, raised a family, and are at a point where now basically the other only sees the negative side of the other, and to get to that point where we once were, and to find the good strengths and good side of the other person? How do you get to that point?
I think that my strategy would be not to try to go back, but to see what's there that can be salvaged, if anything. And to think about that person as someone that I love and that I will be in relation with, but not to sacrifice myself on behalf of something that may no longer exist.
Okay.
So I think that we have to make room for ourselves to grow and for the other person to grow. I'm not saying separate, but just understand that there is a separation in the entities of beings that are individual, and to find ways to bridge the gap and come together again, rather than going back, find something new that you can relate upon.
Well, yes, and that, when I said going back, I didn't mean that like literally. I
know what you meant. I'm not meaning literally. I'm just saying that we hold a picture in our mind based on what we experience, and we're trying to replicate it. And it may be that it's not able to be replicated, but we can still chart a path back towards each other by finding in new ways things that are common. But I think the reason I'm cautious is because it's so easy to get stuck in an abusive situation, and I don't think that if a person is being abused, that relationship should be salvaged. It has to be changed or ended, but you don't want to stay in an abusive situation. It destroys your own soul. I know that's not what you wanted me to say,
no.
But that's what came. That's what came
that's
to me.
No, that's it's reality. I understand.
Yeah. So I got to run, though. Thank you so much for your call.
Good. Thank you. You have a very soothing voice, ma'am. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
And you've been listening to Heart of Mind Radio for the New Millennium. And I am Catherine Davis. And I'm going to see if I can get to the midway of this song as we make our way to the next program coming up in a few.
Lo siento. Kagemita. They don't.